Nick DeGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studios on the seventh floor of Trib Tower. We're here till midnight tonight. The phone number is 312-981-7200. And we are about to jump into the movie reviews. Now, we would normally do the midnight movie reviews every Friday night at midnight. And now we've moved it to Saturday nights at 10:30. And it is the Saturday night movie reviews. And it consists of Colin Suter and Eric Childress and myself reviewing the new movies. We've got a lot to review this week, including all of the new on-demand films as well. And questions or comments, reviews of your own, 312-981-7200. And you can follow us at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So let's get it started. It is that time of the week for the movie reviews, Saturday night movie reviews. That's what they are, and let's get to the phones. Here is Colin. How you doing, Colin?
Good.
All right, and Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All righty, then. So, well, first, Eric, you went to your 20th high school reunion tonight?
Yes, I did.
How was that?
Very interesting.
Yeah?
Very interesting, yeah. It was great to see a lot of people for the first time in 20 years, a lot of them.
Yeah.
Held it at one of the person who organized it, Aaron O'Donnell, one of my classmates, has a family bar in Franklin Park. It's called Mike O'Donnell's Irish Pub. So anyone who's in Franklin Park, it's your kind of place, Nick.
Is it?
It's definitely your kind of place. So if you're ever in Franklin Park, I definitely recommend checking this pub out. But yeah, no, it was really, you know the quote in Gross Point Blank where Joan Cusack says it was as if everyone had just swelled.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my favorite line to describe a reunion, but it does not apply to my classmates.
No.
Which is a little disconcerting on my behalf because we have a good-looking group of people.
Yeah.
In this class. It was, Driscoll Catholic. It was, we only had like 92 graduating people. It was a very small school, obviously.
Yeah.
So everyone just kind of knew everyone, obviously, and everyone has held up very well.
Well, good.
I must say.
Good. You know, yeah. I went to my this year would have been my 30th, I don't think anybody organized anything, or they just didn't tell me. I don't know.
Well, it was actually at Mike O'Donnell's Irish Pub tonight.
Oh, is that what it was?
It was in the other room.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. They said you're one with DeGilio. Oh, just like oh, well, I'm like yeah. He's not coming.
But it was funny. My 10th reunion was one that was awesome because.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, everybody, all the guys that I hung out with went.
Yeah.
And so that was, that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the 20th I went to, and it was hardly any of my friends there. It was just a whole bunch of people that I didn't hang out with in high school were there.
But, yeah. I mean, the people that were at the reunion tonight, I hung out with many of them in one way or another. But excuse me, a lot of my, my real close friends from high school, moved out of state.
Yeah,
many of them. So I just, it's unfortunate that they just weren't around.
Yeah.
For this, but it was still good to see all these people.
Oh, it's,
that I
no,
have
it's,
seen.
I think it's kind of fun, and also, I mean, the 20th, which was not as much fun as the 10th, it didn't matter because it was at Goose Island.
Oh, there you go.
And all the beer was free. So I was like, oh, okay,
yeah.
All right, there you go.
We had that privilege tonight too,
yeah,
and
nice.
I wasn't going to have one, but then I heard you on the way here that it was National Drink a Beer Day.
Yeah,
so I'm like, well, hell,
you got to have one.
One.
Now,
yeah.
Colin, have you gone to any of your reunions?
Well, I went to my 20th a couple of years ago,
yeah.
And that's a whole a weird story unto itself. It was an evening where Jonathan Demme movies kept popping up in the background, and it ended with me, actually, Nick, meeting you at the Music Box, and we went to see Something Wild.
Oh, that's right.
Remember that?
That's right.
The midnight show of Something Wild, in which Jeff Daniels goes to Melanie Griffith's high school reunion.
That's right.
So everything that evening was coming full circle in so many ways.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah, you and I went to go see Something Wild. What a great movie that is.
Well, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So
one of my all-time favorites.
All right. Now, am I to understand that none of us went to go see the Meatballs thing?
I think that's correct.
The title scared me off. I thought it was like Cloudy with a Chance of Seeing Meatballs 2.
Yeah, well,
and
that's
I don't want to see Meatballs 2 again.
Yeah. Well,
sorry.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. I got to tell you, though, because, you know, I thought the first one was okay.
Yeah.
But
I love the first one. I think it's terrific.
Yeah,
I enjoy it.
But, you know, I thought the first one was okay, but this one looks great. I don't know why. Every single time I see the commercial and it says, there's a leak in the boat, and it's an actual, it's a leak, like, you know, the vegetable. That cracks me up every single time I see the commercial. So, all right. Well, if anybody saw Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, give us a call. I didn't have time to see it this week, but we've got almost everything else is pretty much covered. Is anybody surprised at the amount of money? Eric, are you surprised at the amount of money that Prisoners made last week?
Not really.
Really?
No, I anticipated to make in the low 20s last week.
Yeah, I don't know. I just didn't expect a film, you know, of that subject matter.
Yeah.
And how dark and really intense and heavy it is, and the fact that it's 2.5 hours long. I didn't think it was going to do as well as it did, but.
Well, none of that was really advertised in the trailers. I mean, in the commercials, it was basically just like, it's a kidnapping thriller, and, you know, Hugh Jackman, look at all these people that are looking for the children.
Right.
You know, so.
I still think it's a pretty great movie. I thought it was great. I really did. All right, so let's get back to some of the stuff that we have to talk about here. On-demand things. We've got, the first movie is called Dark Touch.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Touch. What do we know about Dark Touch?
I know it seems to be another haunted house type, creepy child type story. From what I gathered about it, a child moves into a house with some relatives or friends or something like that, and she carries with her a dark touch or something.
It says, in a remote town in Ireland, see right there,
okay.
that piques my interest and I believe Colin's interest.
Yep.
11-year-old Nev finds herself the sole survivor of a bloody massacre that killed her parents and a younger brother. Suspecting a gang of homicidal vandals, the police ignore Nev's explanation that the house is actually the culprit.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Dark
Touch. I did see the trailer for this.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
do anything for you?
Not really. I mean, I like movies that take place in Ireland, so I don't know.
Sure.
So, all right. And now, what is the facility?
The facility is one of these stories, like 6 or 7 random people get involved in this sort of government experiment dealing with drugs and paranoia and stuff. And, you know, the scene in Firestarter where they all get that, you know, the mysterious thing and they all get bloody eyeballs?
Right, right.
That's kind of what this is, basically. It's basically the scene from Firestarter that involves the shop and Freddie Jones. But it's 90 minutes long.
All right. Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
Now, this next one, I got to say, I didn't know that this was happening at all.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But this is like one of my boyfriends.
Uh-huh.
Is now directing?
Yeah. Features, not just docs.
Yeah. Man of Tai Chi.
That's right.
And it's Keanu is in it.
Uh-huh.
And Keanu directed it.
That's right.
Now, what the heck?
I saw this at Toronto.
You did?
Actually. Yes, it played at Toronto. I was actually at the Keanu was there in attendance.
Cool.
Giving some incredibly lively Q&A, like more than you've ever seen him in an interview before.
Yeah.
But this is his feature directorial debut, and clearly his experience in The Matrix has rubbed off on him because this is a story involving a guy and underground fighting. I believe the martial arts expert, his name is Tiger Chen.
Yes.
Tiger Chen, okay.
Yep.
New guy, never seen him before. And he basically, you know, down on his luck, money kind of thing, needs money. And someone's, you know, Keanu runs this underground fighting ring in secret, in these secret rooms in an underground lair that the cops in Hong Kong cannot find. And he recruits this guy to basically, you know, basically do this blood sport. While meantime, he's being filmed and, you know, put out on YouTube. So everyone's really enjoying all these, you know, these bloody fights that are going on. And Keanu Reeves plays the guy. Now, do you have Keanu Reeves' character name in front of you?
Let me scroll down here.
Yes, please. It has to be said.
Donica Mark.
That's right. Donica Mark. Keanu Reeves. And if there's not like a meme already online with some of the facial expressions that Keanu gives in this movie, there will be by the time we're done with this review. Because Keanu Reeves' performance is hilarious in this movie. And the movie itself, pretty good.
Is it?
It's pretty good. I mean, if you just want just a good, dumb martial arts movie with just a bunch of good fights and stuff, this is what you're going to get.
Cool.
It's not The Raid. Don't go in expecting that.
Right.
But the fight scenes, especially in the first sort of two-thirds of the movie, some of them are really terrific.
Wow.
I really kind of wish that Keanu didn't feel the need to be the climactic boss villain, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
You know, because seeing him against Tiger Chen doesn't quite match up to,
right,
you know.
Right.
You put him in the Matrix, he's the hero, he's going to kick your ass.
Right.
But,
right,
you know, against a real martial arts guy, you're going to slow down the film a little bit. So,
all right, so the Man of Tai Chi. And he's got that 47 Ronin thing coming out, too.
Yes, he does.
He's Johnny Martial Arts now.
I think he filmed this after, I mean, 47 Ronin's been on the shelf for a while now.
Yeah, it has.
So he filmed this after he did that.
Wow. All right. The Man of Tai Chi, directed by Keanu. I'm excited for Keanu.
You should. You should be. You're going to enjoy this one.
Okay, I'm going to watch it. All right, everybody, hang on. Eric and Colin are here, and we're talking about movies. We're going through the on-demand films first, and then we'll do the theatrical ones. All of that and more on the movie reviews on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. It is the Saturday Night Movie Reviews with Colin and Eric, and let's get back to it. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. Eric, what is the deal with Mr. Nobody?
Mr. Nobody seems to be a really interesting story. For one, you might want to look at the plot description there, but this is a movie that actually premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in 2009.
Right. I'm looking at the year, and it says 2009.
Yeah. It's been sitting on the shelf for a long time. From people who have seen it, people seem to really like the movie. The cast is pretty terrific. I mean, Jared Leto, Sarah Polley is in the film, Juno Temple. It's got a really solid cast and a really intriguing premise. It's a sci-fi premise. Do you have it in front of you?
Yeah.
Read that off, because it's really interesting.
It says in the year 2092, a 118-year-old Nemo is recounting his life story to a reporter. He is less than clear, oftentimes thinking that he is only 34 years of age, but his story becomes more confusing after he does focus on the fact of his current real age. He tells his life at three primary points in his life, at age 9, when his parents divorced, age 16, and age 34. And then it
goes into like a cryo sleep or something like that and wakes up and everyone else is different.
And then also says, a boy stands on a station platform as a train is about to leave. Should he go with his mother or stay with his father? An infinity of possibilities rise from this decision. As long as he doesn't choose, anything is possible.
Ooh.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for this movie and I was like, what is this?
Yeah, and it's 2.5 hours long as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so I didn't get a chance. That was a lot of time to put together today, and I didn't have the opportunity. But intriguing enough, and like I said, the people that I know that have seen it seem to really like it.
Okay, so that's Mr. Nobody with Jordan Catalano.
Yes.
By the way, did you guys see that commercial at the Emmys last week with the Claire Danes, that long commercial with Claire Danes?
The sliding doors commercial?
Yeah. Did you see?
Yes.
Did you see the ending of the commercial?
She's in a bar.
She's in a bar.
Yeah.
And her she's on TV in the Emmys, And a dude in the bar, you don't see him, but a dude in the bar behind her goes, "Hey, I used to date that girl in high school." And then she goes, "Jordan?" And that's the end of the commercial.
Right. Yes.
I almost fell off my chair when I saw
it. I was too busy trying to figure out what the hell that commercial was about.
Yeah, I didn't. But
what it was for.
I know. But the Jordan bit killed me. That was fun.
Yes.
All right. And we have another music documentary now.
Yes.
Muscle Shoals.
Yeah. Colin, did you not see this one?
I was going to, but the screener link that was sent out expired before I had a chance, and I didn't write down the expiration date, so I missed out, unfortunately.
I love it when they do that.
I definitely want to, though. Yeah.
What is this one particularly about? I don't have. I'm
well. Muscle Shoals, Alabama. There's an incredible legendary studio that takes place there, and it's about the founder of the studio in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, where so many amazing songs were recorded. A lot of soul songs were recorded, and it's probably similar to, I would imagine, Colin, maybe similar to the Dave Grohl documentary that came out.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
This is going back to, I'm just looking at the list of people who are in this thing. Greg Allman, Jimmy Cliff, Aretha Franklin, Mick Jagger, Bono, Alicia Keys, it's about Rick Hall is the name of the founder of the studio, where they recorded, I'll Take You There and Brown Sugar and When a Man Loves a Woman. So.
Yeah.
I'm definitely want to see this one.
Yeah, it shouldn't be opening in theaters, I think, in October, but it's on demand now. So if you would like to see it on demand, you can. All right. Let's see. What about, tell me very quickly, Eric, before we hit the news here, what's the deal with A Night in the Woods?
Night in the Woods is probably the most derivative Blair Witch Project ripoff I've ever seen.
Really?
Yes. And I was kind of shocked. Actually, because it stars Scoot McNairy, who was in the movie Monsters and was also one of the hostages in Argo. But him, his girlfriend, and a friend of hers, basically they go into the woods. The movie opens with a whole thing about the three hikers went into the woods and they were never recovered. This is the footage that was found and edited together to tell their story. Okay, and so the first. It seems like it's going to be this thing about how the three of them, like sexual tensions and things like that are getting in the way, and then things go bump in the night. But it takes about an hour for you to get to that point for someone to go missing finally.
Yeah.
And then when someone's trapped in their tent alone, you have the exact same palm prints on the tent scene, and then it leads up to, an ambiguous ending that offers nothing. This movie is garbage.
All right. A Night in the Woods. And it's nice to see that they're still making Blair Witch movies 14 years after the thing came out.
Yeah, seriously.
All right. Hang on a second, guys. Eric and Colin will rejoin me after the news. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are here till midnight tonight, and we've got the midnight movie reviews that are now the Saturday night movie reviews. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com join me every Saturday to review all the new movies in the theaters and to take care of all the films that you can watch on demand that are even – some of them are just in theaters on the same day. Some aren't even in theaters yet, but you can watch them at home on demand. We got two more on-demand movies to talk about, and then we'll get to the other stuff. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
The Secret Lives of Dorks.
Yeah.
Eric, why don't you tell us about this one?
Okay. This is a story of a dork in high school who really has a big crush on the head cheerleader. Obviously that's not working out. But the cheerleader sees the opportunity to sort of get him off of her trail if she can set him up with sort of another dork, a female dork. So it becomes a sort of ever-evolving, revolving door of who's trying to set up who, and the two dorks, obviously perfect for each other, but the guy still not quite realizing it. This is a film that starts off with some potential, with the dork trying off a number of sort of, you know, hit me lines, kind of thing, hit on her lines, come on lines, if you will. And that's about where I stopped liking the movie, about 5 minutes in. Needless to say, James Belushi plays his father. I could have led with that. We could have saved some time. Who's a gigantic, let me get this straight. He's a gigantic Bears fan, and he takes advice from an imaginary Mike Ditka.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Ooh. Jeez.
Yeah. How's that sound?
That sounds painful. Okay. All right. Let's just, let's move on. Jim Belushi's in it. So enough said.
Right.
All right. That's The Secret Lives of Dorks, which is playing exclusively at the 600 North Michigan theater. So there you go. All right. Now, this next one I am intrigued by. I wasn't even aware that they made a movie out of it. It's Some Girls, and it's not to be confused with that Patrick Dempsey movie from
Good call.
I don't know how many years ago. But this is I've seen this play.
Okay.
Neil LaBute, who I think is a pretty interesting writer and has done some really great stuff. And And he did not direct this, though.
No, it was directed by Daisy von Schirler-Mayer, whose directorial credits include Party Girl, the Parker Posey film, also Woo with Jada Pinkett Smith.
Yeah,
it's not a very impressive resume.
I'm actually a fan of Party Girl, but
a lot of people are.
Yeah.
Since then, she's done a lot of TV.
Yeah.
Like you said, it is a play, and there's a story of a guy who is getting married and decides to revisit a lot of the ex-girlfriends from his past to sort of see where it's basically sort of make amends in a way. In many ways, it's High Fidelity.
Right. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. And so he's basically Adam Brody is the guy. He goes around to different cities and takes place in a lot of different hotel rooms. Some of the people involved include Kristen Bell, Zoe Kazan, Jennifer Morrison, and Emily Watson, even at one point. And to me, this is not one of LaBute's stronger works. The characters, you know, to say characters are unlikable in the LaBute film is, you know, whatever. But the material to me just didn't ring very true for me. I didn't really care about him making amends and the sort of the insights into male-female relationships, I think, have been done in much better and much harsher terms in a lot of LaBute's work. This film, it just seemed to be, again, it's sort of like very repetitive. Once you sort of get one, you know, ex-girlfriend, you know, it's basically, you know, Neil LaBute's Scott Pilgrim versus the world, just without the fighting.
Well, I'm not, this is not one of my favorite LaBute plays. I saw one production of it. It was pretty good because the acting was so strong. But it's not. I don't think it's one of his strongest plays, which is why I was surprised to see that they made a film out of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Well, I'm always, you know, I'm a state of things guy myself when it comes to Neil LaBute relationship movies. That's the go-to right there.
Absolutely, it is.
All right. Well, let's get to the ones that are out in theaters. And Colin, why don't you, you're going to be able to handle a baggage claim for us.
Oh, good.
All right. So tell us about baggage.
I got a text from our friend Jim, who said he saw Mr. Nobody and that it's a disaster, it's a mess, and don't see it. So.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
All right, Mr. Nobody.
There's a review from Jim.
Okay.
Yeah. So speaking of disasters, baggage claim. This is your stereotypical dopey romantic comedy that has absolutely no surprises in it. It's about a single girl who is in a relationship at the start of the film and then finds out that her current boyfriend is not cheating on her, but he's already married and has a kid. And that's what she finds out, and then they break up, and then she's single again. And she is a flight attendant, and she has two best friends, and I bet you can guess the type of two best friends that she has. One is plump and sassy, and the other one is an effeminate gay man who wears bow ties. and they hatch a plan through circuitous means. She can find out where her ex-boyfriends, or when her ex-boyfriends, who she wants to reconnect with, are flying, you know, across the country. And so she can find us out and then, you know, schedule herself on that flight and have an accidental run-in with them. And she gives herself 30 days to find this, you know, her perfect guy.
Yeah.
So she can, you know, settle down and get married. Are you vomiting yet?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So luckily, you know, and of course she meets three of them, and they all turn out to be, you know, financially successful, but socially or, you know, inept, or just, you know, have too many red flags. One's a Republican running for office. You know, one's a hip hop star who has a psychotic ex-girlfriend. And then Jaimin Hinsu plays a wealthy hotel owner who, you know, promises that he can, you know, fly her around the world and give her the adventure of a lifetime, but he's not going to marry her. But that's okay, because luckily she lives next door in the same apartment building to her old friend from high school, played by Derek Luke, who, you know, is, of course, good-looking and charming, and, of course, they can read each other's minds, and he's got a girlfriend already, but who's a total ditz. And you know where this is going. Yeah, he proposes to her at the end in an airport. There, okay. I just saved everybody $10. You don't have to go see this thing. Yeah, everything you expect to happen in a romantic comedy happens here. I mean, I'm sorry, a dopey, lame brain, lazy romantic comedy happens here. The closest thing we get to knowing this character, the closest thing this movie comes to actually, you know, giving her a little bit of depth, is that she makes a somewhat racist comment about Tiger Woods in one scene and then says she doesn't trust black Republicans in another scene. So other than that, she's just kind of a bubblehead who just, you know, wants the perfect guy, wants to find the one. Yeah, this is crap. this is why people hate romantic comedies. We're going to talk about another movie about which is an example why people like romantic comedies later on, but oddly enough, both films are from the same studio. Both are opening in Chicago on the same weekend. One's probably going to make a little more money this weekend than the other, and it's not the right movie. But this is total crap. Don't go see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Paula Patton's in it, and she's nice. She's nice and naked in Two Guns. That's all I care about.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I mean, she's got a lot of appeal. She's very nice to look at, and I wish for better things for her, but yeah.
Okay.
This is awful.
All right, sounds bad. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about Computer Chess, which is playing at the Music Box.
Okay, Computer Chess is the latest film from Andrew Bujalski. One of the guys sort of been doing on the Mumblecore scene even before it was called Mumblecore. In a way, directed movies like Funny Ha Ha and Mutual Appreciation. And this is a story that he actually does in the style of sort of a very late 70s, maybe even early 80s sort of video feed, the kind of thing that Matthew Broderick was basically watching on War Games. those old sort of computer-based, you know, video files.
Yeah.
And this one takes place during not so much a chess competition, but sort of a gathering of minds, sort of a geeky gathering of minds who can put together sort of the best chess program, the best way for the computer to solve all the chess problems and the best thing to go up against the human. Basically, these are the people that, you know, designed the chess things before the global thermonuclear war stuff. So it's done in, you know, that this really, you know, black and white, grainy video style, with all these people being interviewed, some of them during the actual putting together of these computer programs, and then discussions that they would have in between involving, you know, whether, you know, computers will develop, you know, enough brain power someday to take over the world and to compete with humans and stuff like that. Bujalski's stuff I've never really responded to in the past. He's a guy that does very sort of nonchalant type humor. We're just kind of like throwing a non sequitur that would hit every like 20-25 minutes. So I never really found a whole lot to laugh or appreciate with his movies until this one, which I really sort of like the way he commits to the idea, and he follows through and with the premise. The conversations in between, some really big laughs in between. The big laughs are still kind of scattered, but the conversations in between are far more interesting. It has some weird science fiction in between in the middle of it. And I think anyone who is a fan of this guy is really going to respond to this thing. People who may not be familiar with his work, this is probably the best place to start. It's an odd film. It's black and white. Like I said, it has that old, grainy style to it. It's shot 1:33, so don't expect anything very cinematic. But I do recommend the film, and it's playing at the Music Box, I believe.
Right, it's at the Music Box. Yeah. Yes. By the way, I'm looking at the cast list. Mitchie Kramer's in it. Mitchie. Wiley Wiggins from Dazed and Confused.
Yes. Yes,
that,
he is.
Where's that guy been, man?
I don't know.
Wow. All right. Okay, cool. All right, that's Computer Chess, which is playing at the Music Box. Okay, you guys, hang on. Some that you recognize, some that you hardly even heard. Ah, yes. It is the movie reviews for the week. Colin and Eric are here, and we're going to continue right now on WGN. And welcome back, guys.
And, hello.
Colin, why don't you tell us about Nimrod's new movie? Metallica, Through the Never, which is a very odd-sounding movie.
Yes. We just never get tired of saying the word Nimrod for a good reason, do we? So this is the Metallica's three-quarters of it is the concert film, one-quarter of it is narrative. And the movie kind of goes back and forth between the two. And the deal is that Metallica is performing a concert in a city. I don't remember what city. I don't even know if they named the city. I don't know. But it's an empty city. Apparently, the whole population is in this arena. And they're performing probably one of their biggest shows ever in terms of scope and scale. I mean, this thing is just huge. But I'll talk about that in a moment. But the storyline is that one of their roadies is a young kid, skateboards to the concert, and he's sent on an errand to go get a truck that just ran out of gas. And he takes a gasoline, can with him and heads out to the streets, which are empty. And he starts seeing some strange things. There's a horse dragging a corpse around. There's car crashes. There's rioters, fighting with cops. It's just a whole sense of lawlessness and very apocalyptic. And it just keeps getting more so as the movie goes on. So that's the storyline that the movie keeps cutting away to. And there's no dialogue in the story, which is a wise choice. But the concert itself is a pretty spectacular one. The stage is designed by the same architect who designed a lot of U2 stages, and it's got it's a big show that's in the round of this arena. It's on the whole floor with a video screen that they're standing on. There's light fixtures shaped like coffins, that hang down and have video screens on them of people being buried alive. There's a statue of Lady Justice being built on the stage during the song "And Justice for All," of course.
Yeah.
That just comes crumbling down at the end and miraculously doesn't kill anybody. It's a big spectacle, the kind of rock show that I really love. And that's what I liked most about this movie, was seeing the show. And luckily, most of the movie is the show. I'm not a big Metallica fan. After a while, all the songs start to sound the same to me. But for people who are fans of Metallica, this is a real treat. The narrative stuff doesn't really justify itself. It's kind of, it's kind of the sort of half-thought-out, half-baked plan that, a rock band like this would conceive of.
Yeah.
But doesn't really come together.
Okay, hang on one second. Hang on one second.
Okay.
We gotta take a break here for news, but we want to get Colin's his thoughts on the rest of this movie. Hang on a second. Wait a minute. Let me do that and then that. All right. We'll take a quick break. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. And we've got the midnight movie reviews have now become the Saturday night movie reviews. And Colin and Eric are here. And Colin, why don't you wrap it up with the Metallica movie real quick?
Yeah, it's a terrific concert film, even for somebody who's a non-fan like me. But the narrative stuff is kind of silly, doesn't really justify itself, but it doesn't bog the movie down either, because the music is still going on while it's happening. So for Metallica fans, I think I think they'll be mostly happy. I know the crowd that I saw it with, by the end of the narrative, or by the end of the, you know, when the story was over, they were just kind of like, huh? I don't get it.
Yeah.
But there's no denying, you know, a Metallica music fan is going to be happy with this. So,
okay, cool.
It's a slight recommendation.
All right, there you go. All right, and Eric, why don't you tell us about Rush real quick?
Okay, this is Ron Howard's latest film. It's the true story of Formula One rivalry in the mid-1970s between James Hunt, played by Chris Hemsworth, and Niki Lauda, played by Daniel Brühl. Their rivalry begins when Hunt sort of spins out Lauda during one of their early races. Lauda eventually, both of them work their way up into a Formula One, and Lauda sort of buys his way in, and he's more the sort of the technical genius on the car circuit, and Hunt is very much, while he's a great driver, is also very much the playboy of the group. So the movie is about their sort of never-ending rivalry and the two different styles of racing and all that kind of stuff. It's more or less the dramatic Talladega Nights when it comes right down to it. And the film itself, to me, doesn't really offer much more than that. I mean, we've seen tons of stories before about rivalries. That's really, you know, more about sort of the mutual respect that, you know, two fierce competitors have for each other. Hemsworth and Brühl are fine. Brühl has a little bit more to do in the film. But the race scenes, to me, didn't do a whole lot to inspire me to have any interest in racing, like most racing movies do, or don't, anyway. Usually I've been a supporter of Ron Howard's sort of populist brand of entertainment, and he tried to do something different here, but I don't think there's much there.
I'm with you 100%. I actually might have liked it even less than you did. I was bored out of my mind during this movie. And I'm not a big race car guy at all. I mean, I just, you know, it doesn't do it for me. I'm trying to think if there's any race car movie. I mean, I liked Le Mans with Steve McQueen.
Did you like Driven?
Driven is ridiculous. But my man directed it.
I know.
And I'm not the, as you know, I'm not the biggest Ron Howard fan in the world.
Right. And, yeah, no, what most people seem don't seem to be.
Yeah, and I just, I don't know. This one just, it bored me. I didn't care. And it's been done a million times, this kind of thing, you know? It's just, and I got to say, despite the fact that I'm not the biggest Ron Howard fan, this is the most un-Ron Howard movie he's made.
Oh, sir. Well, I mean, he's done other R-rated films.
Yeah.
I think the cinematography kind of lends itself to that. I don't know how far. I mean, maybe that's why people is getting a pass, because people seem to think like, oh, well, is Ron Howard doing something with style?
Yeah,
you know, so we should give him a pass. But you know, the story is still the story, and there's not a whole lot there. It's just, this really isn't. I don't care who directed it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I guess we're in 100% agreement on this one. I would skip it. I would skip it. Go rent the one with Jennifer Jason Leigh and Jason Patrick. That's a much
there
better.
You go.
Much better movie.
Much different movie.
Much different. All right, and Colin, why don't you tell us about Enough Said?
All righty. Well, this stars Julia Louis-Dreyfus as a masseuse and a divorcee with a teenage daughter who is about to leave the nest and go off to college. And she meets, or Julia Louis-Dreyfus meets a guy at a party played by James Gandolfini, who's also a divorcee with a teenage daughter going off to college, and she also meets at this party a woman played by Catherine Keener, who's a published poet. And she becomes a new massage client for Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And Gandolfini becomes the new man in her life, one whom she didn't quite expect, but they, you know, have a nice chemistry together, even though he's not quite her type physically. Still, there's something comforting about having a guy in her life who's going through the same things she's going through. But, of course, complications ensue when she realizes that Gandolfini is Keener's ex-husband, and Keener has been confiding in her all this time about how much her ex-husband annoys her. And suddenly all those little annoyances come into the fray, and their relationship is put to the test. And, you know, she has to keep a secret that she knows who he was married to. So this was written and directed by Nicole Holofcener, who also did Lovely and Amazing and Just Give and Walking and Talking. And she's made a career out of crafting these wonderful romantic comedy drama character studies about contemporary living and personal issues that people deal with, such as, you know, money and appearances, and in this case, age. And all of them from a female perspective, but never to the point where, a man in the audience watching it is made to feel unwelcome. All of her films seem to come from a very personal place, and her, perspective on these issues is, often very funny and relatable to just about anyone. And this is no exception. Enough Said is exactly the opposite of Baggage Claim. It's really a good romantic comedy. I don't think Julia Louis-Dreyfus has ever been better in a movie. And of course, it goes without saying that the early loss of Gandolfini is all the more tragic when watching this, because he turns in a great leading man performance. This is not his last film. He's got one more. Hopefully his final film will be as good as this, because this would have been a good high note to go out on. But regardless, this is a great movie for adults, about adults, that adults should go and see and support, because it's only getting a limited release. So people need to go and support this movie and check it out.
All right. That's Enough Said. Eric, what'd you think?
I think it's a pretty great movie. Everything Colin said is absolutely equaled on my part. You think about it, when you hear Colin talk about Baggage Claim, you just sort of describe the plot of this movie to people, you sort of get to that twist. With the ex-wife. It sounds like it, I didn't even watch the trailer before I saw this movie. And then I watched it after I saw the movie. And if I would have seen it beforehand, I would have been like, oh no, that's not where you're going with this material, is it?
Yeah.
But Holofcener, her movies are about something. Her movies are not necessarily about her plotting. And the plotting here sometimes gets a little intricate. But it doesn't matter, because she's telling stories from, the point of view of people, not, a screenwriter's, tool, so to speak. And it sounds like it could just be, just sort of a big screen version of a Seinfeld episode. A trait that was explored on that show many times over. This time you get Julia Louis-Dreyfus getting to deal with it, and it does, and they deal with it in a very unique way. And the idea that our perceptions of people can sometimes be formed or ill-informed by the reactions of others. It makes a nice sort of companion piece, I think, to Sarah Polley's Stories We Tell, and the idea that, you tell one story about someone, and all of a sudden the world has changed in some small way. At least your world has changed. This is a really special movie, and Gandolfini, damn it. Really all you got to say after seeing this movie, because, after the first date scene between him and Julie Dreyfus is just about perfect, perfectly written, perfectly performed, and the movie, the rest of the movie is just as good.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on this one. I loved it. I thought it was great, and I think she's a terrific filmmaker, man. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the best work she's ever done, I think, and I'm a big fan of hers. I love her on Veep. I loved her on Seinfeld, and I just think she's great, and she's just terrific in this film. And the chemistry between her and Gandolfini is really special. And boy, I'll tell you, Gandolfini, man, it's just heartbreaking to watch. It really is. But it's a wonderful movie, really terrific. And as you said, Colin, a really good film about adults, for adults, that adults should see. A great romantic comedy. And for people who are always yelling at us about not liking romantic comedies, here's one we like a lot. Enough Said is a terrific film. All right, you guys hang on. We got one more movie to talk about, and it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt's directorial debut, Don John, next.
The Cubs, baby. Baseball season comes to an end. David Haugh and I will recap the 2013 year and where the Cubs are at after 2 years of rebuilding. Cubs Weekly with me, Jordan Bernfield, tomorrow afternoon on 720 WGN.
Raindrop Gutter Guards will be the last gutter guard system you'll ever need. Raindrop offers great protection with a self-cleaning design like no other. It handles more rainwater than any solid hood cover claims to, and is no maintenance compared to micro screens and flat-laying gutter guards. It's the performance you want under all weather conditions, and it's made of eco-friendly and super durable polypropylene. Visit raindropgutterguard.com for a certified installer near you. Raindropgutterguard.com. Gutter protection perfected.
They say everything comes down to the wire these days. Politics, reality TV, midnight shopping sprees. Really? Because I'm not buying it. You know what really comes down to the wire? 1,000-pound thoroughbred horses in a heart-pounding 2-minute race, hurtling headlong at 40 miles an hour towards a photo finish while thousands of fans scream their heads off for a big-ticket payday. That's the original Down to the Wire. That's horse racing. That's Hawthorne.
Don't miss nighttime thoroughbred racing under the lights on Saturday, October 5th. Barbecue, beer, and live music right along Hawthorne's home stretch from 5 to 9 p.m.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story of how SelectQuote goes to bat for you buying term life insurance. A while back, a man called me who had had prostate cancer. He asked if I could beat a very high quote another life insurance agent had given him. I said, let me see. Well, I took his pertinent information, then shopped the highly rated, price-competitive companies we represent, and found one who pre-approved him for a premium way below what he had been quoted. When it comes to term life insurance, no other company touches SelectQuote's experience and expertise in finding the right policy at the right price for almost anyone. How about you?
For your free quote, call 1-800-400-4216. That's 1-800-400-4216. 1-800-400-4216. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop. You say.
Guys, do you feel like half the man you used to be? A drop in your testosterone levels could mean less energy, less support for your muscle health, and less romantic drive and libido. So call now for a free bottle of Ageless Male, a best-selling supplement that helps boost your free testosterone levels. It's free. You only pay shipping and handling. Just call 1-800-486-8768. Ageless Male is made with natural ingredients, clinically shown to boost free testosterone levels, so you can promote healthy energy production. You can support your muscle health, and you can finally bring passion back to your romantic life. Best of all, for a limited time, you can try Ageless Male for free. But you must hurry, because this free offer won't last long. Just call 1-800-486-8768. 1-800-486-8768. 1-800-486-8768.
Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGM. I got one more movie to review. Let's get right to it. This is Colin and Eric. Eric, tell us briefly, kind of quickly, about Don John. Don John.
Okay, we said this is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's directorial debut, which he stars in. He plays the main character. He's a guy that is a Jersey guy who, not to find a point, he's kind of addicted to pornography. He's sort of more to the point, sort of addicted to the fantasy of pornography. He can't just go a day or even a few hours without it, you know, even after he gets a girl for the evening. But then he meets a gorgeous woman played by Scarlett Johansson, and he starts to realize that, he might really have a thing for this girl. They start to date, and she starts to influence his life in many ways. When she actually catches him doing or looking at some pornography after they finally had some intercourse, things don't go so well. So he's forced to sort of confront his addiction in a way, and he does so through the help of a classmate played by Julianne Moore takes the film into some very interesting, unexpected ways later on. This is a very confident directorial debut from Levitt, and especially, and also as an actor, I think he's a guy that has absolutely grown to really hold the screen and hold our attention. He was great in Looper last year, and amongst other things, and he's really terrific here. It says a lot that a character like this could easily be very unlikable, very despicable. It takes a guy as likable as Gordon Levitt to portray him, and I think he does a great job. Johansson is also really good here. Julianne Moore, some of the stuff with Julianne Moore, I think there's some unexplored psychology there that I think, I don't know if Gordon Levitt was quite ready to tackle. So some of the stuff in the latter third doesn't quite work for me. But there's a real confidence going on in Levitt's direction. There's a scene between him and Johansson late in the film at over coffee, where a lot of sort of director actors would have taken the opportunity to really sort of you know blow up, and he plays it very beautifully, very subtly, kind of just perfectly. It's not a great film, but it's a confident one. It's a funny one at times, and I like Don John.
Okay, Colin.
Yeah, I liked it too. And I think the stuff between Moore and Gordon Levitt, I think that's the best stuff in the film. And oddly enough, it's the stuff that's not being advertised that much.
At all.
The ads that I'm seeing.
At all. Yeah.
I agree. Scarlett Johansson, I think this is the best she's been in a while. And I think it takes a while for the movie to, for the character to go through the inevitable arc that we know he's going to go through. It takes its time getting there, which I think is a smart move. It makes it more believable. It's not forced. The thing I was kind of mostly annoyed by was the stuff with his family. Tony Danza and Glenn Headley play his parents, and they're kind of a basic, sort of New Jersey Italian stereotypes. And, the sister never says anything. She's going to give the pearls of wisdom at the end. I kind of get tired of that, but. Other than that, yeah, like I said, like Eric said, it's a good film, not a great film, but, definitely one worth seeing. And, Nick, I hope you caught the sort of Magnolia joke. At least I think it's a Magnolia joke in the movie.
Tell me which.
When she says, so did you just call me lady?
Yeah.
How dare you? Oh my God.
Yeah. All right. I like this movie actually kind of a lot. I thought it was really good. I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt did a great job. I liked the family stuff. And I thought that Brie Larson was hilarious. Every time they cut to a shot of Brie Larson, I was laughing every single time.
It gets funnier and funnier.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Inevitably, she is going to have the pearls of wisdom. And she does. And it's funny. I think it's still a funny moment. Tony Danza killed me in this. I thought Tony Danza was great. I thought he was just great. And Scarlett Johansson, one of the best performances she's ever given. And Colin, I got to agree with you. I think the strongest stuff in this movie is the stuff between Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Julianne Moore, who I just think is exquisite in this movie. Just wonderful. This kind of movie has been done before. The cad learns his lesson and becomes a better person. But it's also shockingly R-rated. I just want to make sure that everybody knows that there's some porn in this movie. There's a lot of porn. There's a lot of F-bombs. There's a lot of sex. Within the first 5 minutes, I was like, whoa! Joseph Gordon-Levitt going for it. But overall, I think it's a pretty terrific movie, and I can't wait to see what else this guy does. You know what I mean? So, All right, what do we got next week?
We got Gravity.
Yes, we do.
We got Gravity.
All right, I'm seeing it Monday in IMAX 3D.
So you won't be with us next week.
Yeah, and are you going to be there too, Colin?
Yes, I will.
Okay, great.
This will be my third time seeing it.
Okay, well, I'll be sitting next to you. I'll be the one that's having a heart attack, all right?
Take care of him, Colin, will you?
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Okay.
All right, Colin and Eric, thank you guys, and there you go. We'll be right back.